All right, good afternoon, everyone. This is the Thursday, June 25th afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Keelan, good afternoon. Could you please call the roll?
Good afternoon, Mayor. Hardesty, Udaly, Ritz.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. City Council under the Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of Council are attending remotely by video and teleconference, and the City has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the City's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, and Channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to council by emailing the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and to promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your patience, flexibility, and understanding as we manage through this challenging situation to conduct the city's business. And now we will hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the City Council Clerk's Office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the City Council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting and refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up or interrupting testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that the council meetings are recorded. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. So we have two items this afternoon. They're both time certain items. The first is item 509. Can you please read it?
Report on recent work from the city auditor. Follow-up reporting, cannabis program, months, urban renewal.
Very good. We'll turn this over to Madam Auditor. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I am City Auditor Mary Hall Capietto, and I'm here today with three performance auditors to talk about some recent projects from my office. First, Elizabeth Pape is going to guide you through a new dashboard that we've created to visualize progress by bureaus on implementing our audit recommendations. The dashboard will enable the public to sort and review progress from different perspectives. Next, we're gonna have Alexander Furchak present audit results from our second cannabis program audit. This one looked at cannabis regulation, and you may recall that the first one that we've already talked about with you focused on the management of cannabis tax revenue. The final presentation will be made by Min Van Vuong, who will walk you through the results of our audit of the Lentz Urban Renewal Area. And so let's get started with the follow-up dashboard.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Pape, and I'm a performance auditor, and I coordinate our office's follow-up process. I'm going to talk to you about our process for following up on audits and some changes to our process, including a new dashboard that tracks recommendation status. We come to you every quarter to present our audit findings, and when we uncover problems, those tend to be the headline topics of discussion. But our role is really not to just highlight problems, it's to be a catalyst for improvements. At the end of every audit report, we issue a series of recommendations intended to make city programs work even better. We track status in 5 categories. Implemented means that the recommendation has been fully implemented by a bureau. In process means that bureaus are on their way to implementation. Slow progress means that bureaus have committed to implementation but have not made much progress yet. Not implemented means that bureaus are not intending to implement a recommendation. And pending means that this is a new recommendation and auditors have not yet followed up on it. So I'm going to walk you through our dashboard. Don't feel like you need to be able to read all of the text that's on the screen. If you want to navigate the dashboard yourself, you can find it at portlandoregon.gov/audit-services/follow-up. We've always tracked recommendations for internal purposes, but have added a dashboard that's easy so that it's easier to find recommendations and put them into context with other audits and bureaus. We're only tracking recommendation status for recommendations we've made since 2018, but we'll continue to track recommendation status for 10 years after an audit. For the first 2 years, we proactively ask management for any changes in recommendation status and supporting evidence. After 2 years, we'll rely on management to let us know if there have been any changes when they occur. The first page of the dashboard is just an introduction. So we're currently tracking 24 audits with 133 recommendations. Just a reminder that pending recommendations are those we've not followed up on yet. They're audits that are less than a year old. Right now, we have a lot of these compared to the other categories because we're just starting this process. But as we collect more recommendations to track, the pending will be a lower percentage of recommendations. And pending is different from in process, which means that the Bureau is working on implementation. So this page allows users to select a bureau to look at recommendations. There's a drop-down tab at the top left side that you can use to select a bureau. So for example, this has environmental services selected. You can see that we've performed 2 audits for environmental services. 3 recommendations are implemented, 5 are pending, and 6 have slow progress. A table below includes the audit report that the recommendation was associated with, the status, the original recommendation with the date of the recommendation, and the update, the current status of the recommendation with the date that we last checked in with the Bureau. And this table, we'll be able to sort by any of these columns. So if you want to sort it by audit, you can sort it here. And if you want to sort by status, you can sort it here. So the next page allows you to look at details by audit. So there's a drop-down list here where you can select an audit by title. So here I've selected the cleanups of homeless camps audit. It includes the narrative summary of the audit and status, and then the table with the Bureau, the status of the recommendation and the update. There's also a link on this page so that you can go to see the full report or the follow-up report. The next page allows you to compare status among bureaus. They're listed in order of number of recommendations. So police has the most recommendations that we're tracking, so that's why it's on top. You can see that the Office of Equity and Human Rights has the highest percentage of recommendations implemented, and that Development Services has the highest percentage of recommendations not implemented. The final page just includes some data notes and definitions for our recommendation status. So we designed the dashboard with a few audiences in mind. So we hope council can use it to identify bureaus that may need additional resources or support in order to implement audit recommendations. The general public can use it to monitor the status of recommendations related to topics of interest and to compare performance across bureaus. Bureau directors can use it to assess bureau performance and to determine if any changes in programs or procedure are necessary. and Bureau management and staff can use it to track recommendation status across audits to develop work plans and priorities. And again, if you want to see the dashboard, it's available online, portlandoregon.gov/audit-services/follow-up. We'll also be sharing it with commissioners and bureaus. And if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them now.
I have a quick question.
Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you for that. I'm really excited about this dashboard. I think it will be so helpful for us as well as the community. My question is, do all of the recommendations from the audits make it onto the follow-up reporting dashboard?
Yes, they do. So as soon as we publish an audit, I'll update the record to add them. They'll be pending when the audit is first published. And on the date that the follow-up is published, I will update the follow-up as well.
Great. Okay, thank you.
I just have a comment. I think this dashboard is excellent. Elizabeth, I commend you and the auditor. I think it's fantastic. Makes a lot of sense. It's easily accessible. It's clear. Really good work on this.
If there are no other questions, you can move to Alexandra.
All right. Looks like you did a good job and you answered everybody's questions proactively. Thank you.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Alexandra Furchak, Performance Auditor, and I will present the Cannabis Program Audit. In this audit, what we did is we outlined what an effective regulatory program needs and how the city's cannabis program is missing some of these management fundamentals in order to improve regulation of the industry. When the city legalized cannabis, City Council directed the Office of Community and Civic Life in order to develop and manage the regulatory process. And also to be responsive to the developing industry, while at the same time balancing business and public health needs. While Civic Life oversees the city's recreational cannabis regulation, it is important to point out that the full process actually involves different city bureaus, such as Bureau of Development Services for Code Enforcement and also the Fire Bureau. And it also includes the regulation by the state of Oregon. This audit focused only on the functions of Civic Life's program. I should also point out that this is the second audit on cannabis regulation. The first one was a review of the city's use of recreational cannabis sales tax, which we published back in May of 2019, so just last year. And we are currently conducting a one-year follow-up of the sales tax audit. So the first finding was that the program strategy was not clearly defined. Civic Life has various goals for the cannabis program, and they finalized a vision document in fall of 2019, just when our field work was wrapping up for this audit. Civic Life will use this vision document to finalize the program strategy and the action steps. Now, some of the challenges that were raised during this audit included coordination with other city bureaus, lack of enforcement for illegal cannabis sales, and also continued barriers to entry for business owners of color. However, in the absence of a clearly defined strategy, Civic Life risks a scattered approach that does not support citywide collaboration and does not respond to emerging industry concerns. The second finding was that budget and fees were not based on strategy or workload. So the program is funded entirely by licensing fees. The fees exceeded program expenses after the initial startup. Now, this could be expected because the scope of the program had not been fully developed. But when the Bureau proposed lowering those fees in September of 2018 and Council approved it, the new fees were still not based on analysis or a staff workload. Without defined program activities and accurate information, management must rely on anecdotal information and can't assess budget requirements or identify appropriate licensing fees. So the third finding is that the data on licensing, enforcement, and complaints is not reliable. Regulatory programs should document data on key processes, such as the timeliness of application process or enforcement actions and their outcomes. Such programs also need to track complaints from the community and how these complaints are addressed. This information should be used to assess performance outcomes, including establishing staffing and budgeting requirements. These practices ensure that decisions are data-driven and that the process informs regulation requirements. Civic Life does collect and report some data on program performance and the makeup, and also the makeup of the cannabis industry. However, due to Civic Life's challenges with technology and also the consistency of data tracking, our main concern here was that the information available is not complete and that it is not valid. So the last finding was that data does not inform future program direction. So Civic Life reports publicly on cannabis business license applications received and the type of licenses issued, but it does not track information on industry or public safety trends. In 2019, so just last year, Civic Life commissioned a cannabis market study, which would provide some of the information needed to effectively manage the program and also to inform its direction. And as the industry, public consumption, and also city and national policy evolves, the city's regulatory purpose and priorities may need to be revisited. But this does require information on program performance, industry needs, and also public impact. So as far as for recommendations, our recommendations to improve program management included to use the program's vision and goals to fully develop and communicate a strategy, including coordination with other city bureaus, to streamline the licensing and enforcement process, and also to really focus the work of the program. The second recommendation was to implement a data management system to consistently and accurately track data on licensing, public complaints, and also on enforcement. And what we recommended is to use that data to manage resources, adjust licensing fees, and report performance. And finally, to inform council and the public about cannabis regulation, we recommended that Civic Life develop a monitoring report or some kind of other type of communication tool that includes information on program performance and also on the Portland's cannabis industry. So that concludes my presentation. If you have any questions, I'm open to answer those right now.
Colleagues, any questions for Alexandra? Alexandra, I had sort of a weird question, and it's not specific to this audit, but it's something that's come up in this audit, and it's come up in other audits as well, related to data and tracking data. And I know this is an issue for all of our city bureaus. This is not unique, obviously, to this particular program. Would it be helpful to have a centralized, and this isn't something we could implement quickly, but would it be helpful to implement a centralized data information management program for all bureaus rather than having 24 separate audits that have different specific recommendations around data management standards, and how best to track and report that data? Wouldn't it make sense for us, thinking about the financial structure of the city being an analogous example, wouldn't it make sense to centralize this?
Yes, and one of the responses that Civic Life provided to us was the challenges working with Bureau of Technology and trying to come up with some kind of a data management system. And that is something that we see in almost every audit across all the different bureaus, is that the bureaus are having problems with data management and data tracking. So, but then what happens is that you have bureaus using these sort of, like, let's say Excel spreadsheets that are not, you know, really useful when it comes to data tracking. So yes, you're correct. I think this comes down to working with the Bureau of Technology and having those tools that they can actually track their data. So, and in this case, what we, you know, a lot of the other cities, what they're doing when it comes to cannabis regulation, they're using a third party data management software. And that can be costly, that can be kind of complicated, and, you know, it can be convoluted in many different ways. But what we are saying is, even if you're using your own developed system, make sure that your system is consistent, that it's valid, that you're really tracking the data that you need to track. So even if you're using your own developed software, make sure you're actually tracking the data that you need for program management.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful and it's interesting. Commissioner Daly had a comment or a question.
Thank you, Mayor, for raising that issue. Technology challenges have been a recurring theme with every bureau I've had in my portfolio. Civic Life had requested funding for a data management system in the spring bump that was not funded. It's fairly critical for us to purchase and implement a new system in order to meet the recommendations by the auditor's office. So we'll be pursuing that at the next opportunity. Our market study has been delayed because of COVID, but that will commence as soon as possible. And I wanted to mention that we hired a new cannabis program supervisor. Her name's Dashita Dawson. And a major focus for her is the visioning and coordination work raised in the auditor's report. So I'm really excited to get to work with her as we continue to make progress on these issues. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Alexandra. Appreciate it.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Mindan Wong, and I'd like to present about our audit of the Lens Urban Renewal Area now. This audit was completed a few months ago, and the Lens Urban Renewal Area is shown on the map here. The city has made investments in the Lens Urban Renewal Area since 2000 to improve the economy, housing, and infrastructure. And our audit found that Prosper Portland has not reported to the public or to City Council how these investments have actually changed Lens. If we don't measure how much progress we're making toward our urban renewal goals, we cannot make course corrections and we leave the community wondering if it was worth it. I'd like to ask my colleague Elizabeth to move to the next slide, thank you. We've had ambitious goals for Lens. Many come from the 1998 urban renewal plan adopted by City Council, and some were added more recently. We also looked at the 2014 Lens 5-year action plan. These goals fall into four broad categories: neighborhood livability, building new and rehabilitated housing, raising wages and supporting jobs, and finally, supporting commerce and developing or redeveloping buildings, especially in the Lens Town Center, which is at 92nd Avenue and Foster Road. The Lens neighborhood was and still is home to vulnerable and disadvantaged communities. And the urban renewal goals also spell out specifically support for people of color and existing Lens residents. On the next slide, we're showing the money that has been spent so far. So to achieve all these goals, Prosper Portland and the Housing Bureau have spent $207 million so far. When we met with Lens community members, many told us they wanted to know more about what urban renewal projects were happening and what has resulted from these investments. So here's how the spending breaks down. Each square on the slide stands for $1 million. The bulk of the urban renewal money in Lens, $74 million in blue on the left, went into redeveloping buildings and revitalizing commerce. $41 million went toward housing, that's shown in yellow here, and then urban renewal dollars also went towards infrastructure improvements, neighborhood revitalization, administrative costs, and a couple other categories of spending. All the amounts here are totals covering the year 2000 to 2018. We did adjust for inflation. Our audit evaluates the success of the Lens urban renewal area, and we did that by quantifying economic and equity outcomes. I have a couple of data highlights now across the four goal areas that I want to share. First up, in neighborhoods, we see that Lens houses more people of color now than in the year 2000, than at the start of urban renewal. But this growing population largely rents rather than owning homes. One goal of urban renewal was to increase the home ownership rates for people of color. On the next slide is another data point about neighborhoods. We are seeing in the land use data that Lens has fewer vacant residential lots. That's a positive development. You can see for Lens the orange line trending down. And to put changes in Lens since 2000 into context, we often compared Lens to an area nearby, Montevilla and Mount Tabor specifically. And this comparison area did not get urban renewal investments. Both of our comparison area and the city as a whole also saw a downward trend in vacant residential property. Housing affordability is a big concern still in Lens. House prices soared citywide, as you know, a little bit less so in Lens, as you can see with the yellow line here. Nevertheless, 3 out of 5 renters in Lens were burdened by rental costs, which means they spend more than 30% of their income on housing. And that is worse than in our comparison area and also worse than citywide. On my next slide here, urban renewal funds helped build housing, affordable housing. The city has contributed funds to about 600 affordable housing units in Lens, and these housing units make up 6% of the housing stock in Lens. And we contrast that with Montevilla, where barely any new affordable housing units were built because there's no urban renewal money available in our comparison area. But we also found that found that the city's goals for building affordable housing in Lens date all the way back to 2005 and thus outdated now. Next, I want to look at jobs and income. Jobs in Lens have grown by 36% since the beginning of urban renewal, and this exceeded the growth in our comparison area and citywide. But on the flip side, when we are concerned, on my next slide, I have wage data. We are concerned that wages and incomes are down in Lens. Prosper Portland has a goal for middle wage job creation and for self-sufficiency. Middle wage job is defined as about $46,000 per year. But when you look at the data for Lens, we see that median household incomes in Lens have fallen, and the median is now below the middle wage goal. And of course, poverty in Lens, as a result of that, poverty in Lens was also worse than in Montevilla and citywide. The number of businesses in Lens has grown, and urban renewal investments have been concentrated in the Lens town center area, where many large projects receive millions of dollars in urban renewal support. For example, the Asian Health and Service Center, Lens Commons, Oliver Station, and Woody Guthrie Place now are open, and they provide affordable housing, market rate housing, and commercial space. Oliver Station, for example, got $22 million, and the Zeugel House Brew Pub, which is located in the bakery block, got about $1 million from urban renewal funds. And further developments are planned for the bakery block and the 92nd Herald site. The 1998 urban renewal plan set anti-displacement goals when calling for housing and jobs to benefit existing Lens residents all the way back then already. And of course, the city has had racial equity goals for the better part of this decade. But we think Prosper Portland's equity analyses fell a little bit short. Prosper Portland did not have equity analyses specific to major projects, such as the big developments in the Lens Town Center I just mentioned. And until 2019, actually, Prosper Portland's own equity policy required exactly that. The agency instead cited some area-wide studies from the beginning of the decade and also pointed to programs that already exist, for example, grants to community organizations, contracting requirements, holding public meetings, and giving rent discounts to diverse businesses in Prosper Portland-funded space. Gentrification, as you all know, has accelerated in length and affects much of East Portland now. And the maps here show in darker red and blue how gentrification has accelerated since 2010. Prosper Portland's management told us that progress should be measured by which projects were planned and completed. And that is important, sure. But we also think it is important to evaluate the results of these projects in the community. Has poverty declined? Is housing more affordable? Have we met our goals? You have to look at how the economy has changed as a result of these investments and where goals may need to be adjusted. This is what we're asking Prosper Portland to report to you and to the public. These are our recommendations stemming from the audit. And that concludes my presentation. If you'd like more detail about urban renewal in Lens or our data, you can download our full audit report and detailed data and charts from our website. And we'd be now happy to answer your questions.
Thank you, Min. Anybody have any questions? Min, in your analysis, and I think it's provocative and I appreciate it, because the way we do tend to measure these things, as Prosper Portland indicated to you, is investments are made in projects, and then success is defined by whether or not the project is successful. And you're making a case for a broader question, which is, are the projects either adequate or sufficient in number to move the dial on the broader dynamics of the community, the economics, the gentrification, the question of housing affordability, which I think is provocative, and I do think it's important. I wonder if in your audit, did you actually connect with stakeholders or community groups in Lentz to find out what kind of data points they would like to see measured?
Yes, Mayor. During our audit, we spent a lot of time in Lens. We met with stakeholders, community groups, residents. We were open to folks contacting us, asking us questions, providing input. And what we heard a lot was that community members were interested in getting a lot more information from Prosper Portland about urban renewal. I feel like there was a real thirst for information. And so we got a lot of these questions of how much money has been spent, what projects were funded, what's in the pipeline, what has been completed, where has the money gone? And we also got a lot of questions, a lot of concerns about affordable housing, how many units of affordable housing were built, where are they, what has the city promised, and how have we fulfilled those promises for affordable housing?
I appreciate that, Min, and I liked the slide in particular where you had the square for each million, you categorized it, and I'm sort of envisioning in my mind that you could go one level down from that and then identify the specific projects that were funded in each of those categories with the millions of dollars that were identified on that chart, and then each project could be further broken out in terms of contributions either to affordable housing or streetscape or business development or economic prosperity. It feels like you've built a template here which can be really valuable, and I just want to acknowledge that. Thank you for your hard work on this. I see Commissioner Udaly has her hand raised. Commissioner.
Thank you, Mayor. On the Lens URA, the only goal that I'm seeing on the tracker is periodic reporting of economic results. So I'm curious how this will address the community concerns that the city isn't doing enough to help BIPOC community members and low-income households in Lens.
Yes, Commissioner. Our recommendation was that our specific recommendation language was that Prosper Portland should begin And the Housing Bureau should continue to periodically measure economic results for the goals that they've set. And I just want to reiterate that we've had, over the years, we've had many plans addressing what should happen in LENS. Of course, the original Urban Renewal Plan in 1998, the LENS Action Plan in 2014, and these documents, and others as well, and these documents really did spell out in quite a lot of detail ambitious goals for LENS, for neighborhood revitalization, commercial revitalization, housing, affordable housing construction, and so on. So we think that the first step here for transparent and performance measurement and reporting should be comparing what has actually happened, what has the city done, and what has actually happened in the economy and in the housing market against our existing goals. And then the second and third part of our recommendation, of our audit recommendation up here, are to update goals as needed and to also report that to the public. So we've heard from the stakeholders that we met in LENS, there was a lot of interest in what the city has done, but they were hungry for information, for more detail on specifically on what projects have been funded, how much money went into supporting homeowners, how much money went into specific development projects such as Oliver Station or the 72 Foster, and how much support has gone to businesses and storefront improvement grants. And I think back in 2014, for example, in the lead up to the 2014-15 LENS Action Plan, Prosper Portland and community members held several meetings. And I envision that when Prosper Portland and the Housing Bureau revisit the goals and look at the data, and they have began doing that after our audit, that could lead to further conversations and meetings with the community as well.
Min, I want to thank you for that. The information that you're suggesting the community would like to see, I'm guessing, is readily available in the bureaus, particularly in Prosper and the Housing Bureau. My question for you is, did the public indicate how they would like that information conveyed? Are they asking for a newsletter or just clear information on the bureau's websites? Did they indicate how they'd like to receive that information?
Mayor, we did not dive into that level of detail when we asked our stakeholders and community members. And you're right, some of the information is readily available from budgets and financial reports from Prosper Portland or the Housing Bureau and from strategic plans, memoranda to the Prosper Portland Board as well, but some data was not readily available and actually needed to be analyzed. For example, some of the detail on the demographic changes, mm-hmm. employment trends, and then, of course, putting that into context and then drawing the comparisons.
Okay. And more specific data as well as a broader narrative about the dynamics of the community? Mm-hmm.
I think some community members have expressed to Prosper Portland before that they would like meetings and information to be broadly accessible, and that means evening meetings so that working people can attend if they want to, and also having translation or interpretation available. And so we strove with our audit report also to make our audit report accessible, so it is pretty short compared to our lengthier audit reports, and it is available on our website and also in hard copy if folks want to request that.
All right, good work, Min. Thank you. And I see Commissioner Fritz has her hand raised. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Min, for this audit. We did receive an email from Nick Sovey with Rose Community Development expressing disappointment that he was not able to testify at this hearing. And just in response, it's a comment, not a question, Min, but a comment in response to the mayor's question. It was best. I found the audit reports more a richer experience, and that they appropriately developed, had more community engagement when we had them as resolutions and the public was allowed to testify on them, because, you know, we're talking, the mayor's question was, how would the community like to get that information? It would be really great if we had community members, and maybe in the future, maybe it's not a resolution, because I know that the audit doesn't like us to accept them, but maybe some invited testimony from community members who informed, especially reports that are more outward facing like this one, compared with the internal one. But even for the cannabis report, it would have been interesting to have had community comments. So as I say, not a question, it's more of a process suggestion moving forward, that when we engage our community, when the report comes to council, they get to say their own thoughts in their own words. Thanks.
Good point, Commissioner. Thank you. All right. Any other questions for Min? Thank you. Excellent report. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mayor, that is.
All right, colleagues, that completes the presentation. And I know this is listed as a report here, but I also want to respect what the auditor has asked, that we not formally vote to accept the report. So I'll just turn to legal counsel. Is it sufficient that we have the hearing?
Well, it's a matter of recognition. I'd like to hear why the auditor wouldn't want to vote on it, but I mean, but otherwise, it's not absolutely necessary that the council vote to accept it, but it's up to the council.
Auditor, has your opinion changed on this, or is there more elucidation you can give to Mr. Farley?
I can provide some more information. We come to council approximately quarterly just to present the information to you as a group. And these reports have already been published. They're published under the authority of my office. And so it's not necessary that you approve them or take any sort of vote. We're here just to present the information. So it's for independence purposes, that's what we're doing. The reports, you have no role in whether the reports are accepted or not. Legally, and so it's just really for your information.
But could these be listed in the future? And Matt, I'm sorry to put you on the spot. Maybe we can just do this offline at a different time. Could these, and periodically we hear presentations, the council simply lists them on the agenda as presentations. Is there any reason why we could not do that with audit reports that you're aware of, Matt?
I think depending on the type of report, the answer could be different, but what we've heard today, I think it's up to the council on whether they would like to vote on it to accept it, but they certainly do not have to do that. It's maybe just more of a policy question of whether from the auditor's perspective, whether it means anything to have some reports adopted by council and others not, like a somewhat of a stamp of a approval or status of the report. But again, it's I think it's up to the council on whether they would like to take a vote. But there's certainly no legal requirement for these reports that we've heard for the council to vote on them.
I don't feel strongly either way. I mean, my role here is to hear the report, hear what the auditor's team has come up with, acknowledge that I've heard it, ask whatever questions come to mind. Commissioner Fritz, do you have an opinion on this?
Yes, as a matter of professional courtesy, the auditor has asked us not to vote on them, and so I think we should respect her request.
I don't hear any legal objection from Mr. Farley. Commissioner Udaly, any thoughts on your end there? Good. All right. Then we have heard the presentation. Madam Auditor, thank you for the great work. Three really solid audits and three really solid presentations. And again, I just want to circle back to the beginning. I really like the dashboard. I think that's an excellent addition to the way that these are presented. It's very clear, it's straightforward, it's easy for people to find the information, and I applaud you for that, so thank you.
Thank you.
It is exactly 2:45 p.m., colleagues. That means we can jump into our second time certain. Keelan, could you please read item number 510?
Document City Council support for the Get Moving Regional Transportation Funding Measure and commitment to enter into legally binding agreements to implement following a successful passage of the regional funding measure.
Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor, and my apologies. The lawnmower just started once again, just in time for Thursday afternoon session. The joys of being a renter.
That guy must have the shortest lawn in the entire city.
It's our courtyard and parking strip.
Oh,
yeah.
Lord.
Okay. So before I begin my remarks, I'd like to move to introduce substitute Exhibit A, which was sent out in the Tuesday memo.
Second.
Thank you.
Any further discussion on the substitute? Keelan, please call the roll on placing the substitute on the table.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
These are just technical amendments. Aye.
Wheeler.
No objection whatsoever. I vote aye. The substitute's now on the table. Commissioner Udaly.
Oh, and Mayor, my run of show starts with you and then me, and then I hand it off.
You'll be happy to know that my talking points are short and I don't have them. So I'll make them up and then I'll turn it over to you. So we're here today to discuss the Get Moving 2020 Regional Transportation Bond. This is an opportunity for the City Council and the public at large to hear from our partners in this and to hear a presentation on what will be on the November 2020 ballot. This is our opportunity as a council to support that effort. And so we'll be hearing from our regional partners on this collaborative work. Commissioner Udaly is the transportation commissioner, has been engaged in these conversations for many months now, and I applaud her hard work and the hard work of her team to bring this forward. And I look forward to hearing more about it today. Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor. Well, after over 20 task force meetings, I'm pleased to introduce this resolution for Council's consideration in support of the Get Moving Regional Transportation Funding Measure. I was proud to bring the city's safety, sustainability, and equity priorities to every corridor and program considered by the task force. It was also important to me that community voices were heard and included in this process. So I want to thank the task force, and I want to thank the Getting There Together Coalition for their diligent work and valuable input throughout this process, as well as Sunrise Movement PDX for showing up and giving powerful testimony before almost every meeting, which I think really helped the task force focus on the importance of both climate and youth voice in this conversation, since these corridors will shape our city and our region for decades to come. By listening to the community, we developed an ambitious, focused, and well-supported proposal. Before I turn it over to President Peterson, I'd like to highlight just a few of the transformational elements of this proposal. It includes investments on 16 of the region's most important corridors for businesses and communities. They're critical routes for transit. This proposal will transform these corridors with street lighting, sidewalks, and safer intersections, and include corridors along 82nd Avenue, 122nd Avenue, and 162nd Avenue, all in East Portland, an area of our city that has suffered from historic underinvestment in our transportation infrastructure. The proposal also includes regional funding for Youth Pass, something that I've been rallying for 3.5 years now, so that's satisfying. It also includes $230 million for community stability with a focus on anti-displacement surrounding investment corridors. This funding is in addition to our tenant protections, regional and city housing measures, and the homeless services measure funding. So it's my hope that we're really gonna make some progress on the anti-displacement front. It was a pleasure to have worked so closely with my fellow task force members from across the region. And this measure is an example of what's possible when we all work together. And I will now turn it over to Metro President Lynn Peterson and Andy Shaw to provide more detail on this proposal. Welcome, President Peterson and Andy.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Daly. Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for being willing to spend some time with us talking through where we're at and where we're headed in the next couple weeks. I'm thrilled to be here to present the Oregon Metro Regional Get Moving 2020 measure. While we're all spending more time at home these days, you don't have to think back very far to remember in February when we all spent more time waiting for the bus, sitting in traffic, or felt nervous even crossing the street. And for some of us, that time waiting in traffic is just deeply inconvenient. For others of us, it's the difference between making it to your job on time or not, being able to go to school or drop out, making it home to tuck your kids in bed or not seeing them yet again that evening. So rebuilding our transportation system not only helps save lives, it helps people live the lives that they want rather than being stuck waiting for the bus or sitting in traffic. And if any of you have tried to move around the region just recently, people are back out and congestion is on the rise again. So now, in this moment in time, we have that opportunity to rebuild our transportation system and our economy, to come out of this COVID moment and this racial justice movement stronger, better prepared for the future. The Get Moving measure focuses on the things that our region needs to help people move around the region safely, affordably, and easily. From building the region's first rapid bus network to rebuilding 86 miles of our region's most dangerous streets, I want to recognize the time and effort and resources that Commissioner Udaly has put into participating in those over 20 meetings. Thank you so much on the city's behalf. Her input and insight were extremely helpful in crafting this package. So thank you, Commissioner. And your staff have worked incredibly hard to make sure that we had the best information available to our task force and helped reduce the overall risk as we created this measure through the identification and design of projects in places like 82nd Avenue, 122nd Avenue, Almina, and the Central City. But we know that in order to meet the needs of the people who live and work in those places, we need to actually get some shit built, right? So the Get Moving measure will rebuild our transportation system and our economy and deliver projects to the people we all represent that will save lives, make our air cleaner, help people get around our region more quickly and affordably, and put thousands of people back to work with family wage jobs. So with that, we'll start the PowerPoint presentation. And just remember that we are all still one region. If we can advance the slide. For a year and a half, Metro has worked with community leaders, partners, and the public to shape a transformative investment package to get our region moving. Together, we have built a plan to make it safer and easier for people to get around where they need to go. It's a plan that prioritizes the outcomes the people of Greater Portland want from their transportation system, outcomes like safety, reliability, access to transportation options, and economic opportunity. It's a plan that we developed with our task force with a lens on racial equity and a focus on meeting our region's ambitious goals to reduce greenhouse gas emission. And now more than ever, it's important to know that the Get Moving Transportation Investment measure is a jobs measure that will put tens of thousands of Oregonians to work directly and help tens of thousands more access employment opportunities throughout the region as our economy recovers. It's a measure that will help keep our community strong in the years ahead. And most of all, Commissioner, I now have one more as well. Most of all, we have worked hard to make sure that a number of the projects in this measure are at the starting line. As I said, we've worked very hard to reduce the risk to the region to make sure that we can deliver the projects that are in this package. Our local partners are truly ready to get moving. Next. We still need to think big though. The Portland region is a very special place and we enjoy close-knit communities, beautiful natural areas, a vibrant and diverse cultural life. It's not a mystery why millions want to call the region home. Next. It is my opinion that we as a region and state have not invested in ourselves in almost four decades. The state has not made significant investments in this region until about 2017, when we had HB 2017 at the state level. But even then, it was a down payment to the actual needs of this region. And it was not in the scale with what we have seen in the other states that we actually compete against. And the federal dollars have not kept up with inflation. And we have had a culture of non-investment for those four decades because we were worried as a people about being too attractive that people might move here. Well, they did anyway. And we are now behind in keeping up with our economy moving. We've seen decade after decade of steady growth, even in the Great Recession, barely slowed the influx of new neighbors. As recently as 2018, Greater Portland saw 2,000 births and arrivals every month. That's a city bus of new faces every day. Even as the pace ebbs and flows from year to year, we expect to add 500,000 more residents in the coming decades. Next. The following sets of slides show where we've been since 1910 in terms of our growth. Decades of growth have brought many benefits to Greater Portland, including historic increases in property values, thousands of jobs, and greater economic opportunity. But this growth that you're seeing before you today also comes with costs, most notably a crisis in affordable housing, encroachment from development on our natural areas, and has put tremendous pressure on our transportation system. And there we go. From 1910 to 2020, that's a lot of growth. Thank you, Andy. All right. So what have we been doing to make sure that we can make sure that this region remains livable, affordable, and safe? We have been working as a region with all of you to make sure that we tackle some of the largest issues in our area. So we passed the country's first ever regional affordable housing bond measure in 2018. We renewed a bond to continue to protect clean air and water and increase people's access to our parks and natural areas in 2019. Last month, the region voters supported a measure to fund services that get people housed and remain housed. Next. But what we're really looking forward to is being able to move the transportation package, which is the last out of the series. The Get Moving 2020 Regional Transportation Funding Measure is a blueprint that will put tens of thousands, 37,000 estimate, conservative estimate, back to work with family wage jobs. The plan was developed with an unprecedented level of public involvement and deep engagement. Our task force has met, like we said, over the last year and a half, sometimes twice a month. Local investment teams brought the lived experience of diverse residents face-to-face with planners and engineers to ensure that local investments truly reflect how people need to use the system. Thousands of online survey comments, hours of public testimony, dozens of community workshops and forums, and hundreds of presentations to local governments and businesses. People have told us very clearly what they want. We're going to deliver it with the investments that will drive our region's economic recovery. And here's how. Andy.
Sorry, I had to unmute myself. So we want to put the region back to work so everyone can get where they need to go safely and on time. We want to put the region back to work so we can all breathe cleaner air and meet our climate goals. We want to put the region back to work to ensure that our investments and our region's recovery benefit everyone, including communities that have long been excluded from full participation in Greater Portland's prosperity. And we want to put the region back to work so people can get to work without spending extra time stuck in traffic. We also want to put the region back to work so we're prepared for the next emergency. This is the Burnside Bridge, which is one of the signature resiliency investments in the overall package. And lastly, we'll put the region back to work while ensuring that our communities are stronger and more resilient, avoiding the displacement and disruption that have followed some past major transportation investments.
So what will we build? We want to relieve key bottlenecks and prevent future ones. Looking at 115 to 120 miles of roadway improvements. And we also want to make sure we're continuing to plan for the future. One of the challenges we found with the state transportation package and often at the federal level is we haven't done all the planning work to be competitive at those levels. So while we've done a fantastic amount of planning, as the council president noted, for this package, we want to continue that so we're ready for the next stimulus package and the next state package. We want to get buses out of traffic so everyone can get there on time. So 25 to 30 miles of new bus lanes and 260 new traffic signal improvements. And those are smart signals to help both buses get priority, but also to move vehicles and freight more efficiently and more reliably through key intersections across the region. We're also looking at, as you know, the new MAX light rail line to serve the residents along the I-5 corridor from Portland down to Tualatin, including the 75,000 new faces we expect to see in this area over the next year. And as Commissioner Udaly noted, we heard very, very strongly the concern about safety and really investing in safer streets across the region. So we're making investments to avoid hundreds of deaths and serious injuries on the region's most dangerous roads and streets. And lastly, we want to make sure that we're making it safe to share the road, 130 to 140 miles of improved bikeways around the region. So just a little bit of a highlight here around safety. We know the City Council has really prioritized investments in safety to serve our most vulnerable populations who walk, bike, and take transit so they cannot be hit or killed. This measure does the same thing at the regional scale, investing in proven safety treatments like sidewalks, crosswalks, street lighting, and better intersections on 86 miles of our region's most dangerous streets. We do want to acknowledge that safety and safe streets means a lot of different things. And if the events of the last few weeks have reminded us of anything, it's that crosswalks and sidewalks are not enough to make people feel safe if their government and institutions of power are not protecting and valuing their life. So we feel good about these investments that will help make crossing the street safer, but we know there's a lot more work to do. And this is a focus on reducing the risk of people getting hit or killed by a car, but we have a lot more work to make our streets really safe. So where will we build it? And I think I'm passing it back over to you, Council President. Or I could keep going.
I'm unmuted, sorry. So this is the most exciting part, I think, the package is this map, because what we asked Commissioner Udaly and her task force members to do was not to an intersection here or an interchange there. We asked them to actually build a transportation system for the future. And so what you're seeing on here is what we asked the task force to do is not look at that incremental approach, but look at something more visionary that actually makes a difference on the affordability, the safety, and the predictability of movement around the region. They started with 70 corridors and ranked them based on those measures and the racial equity.
Just a sec.
Oh my goodness, Siri decided to talk.
70?
These are the 16 that they prioritized, and they represent over 150 separate projects within those 16 corridors. This measure leverages investments in a critical regional network of corridors, including long-neglected arterials that link people to job centers across the Portland area. Some of these corridors include long city streets like Burnside or Southwest 185th, and many are old state highways like TV Highway, McLaughlin, and 82nd Avenue, which now must serve both commuters and people living in dense urban neighborhoods. All of them connect working families to growing employment areas. In fact, these 16 corridors represent 60% of employees within the region, which is an amazing, amazing investment in our economic vitality. It invests in safety, reliability, and transportation options along these corridors, which will make the system work better for everyone now and in the future. And more importantly, 150 projects that have been scoped and readied for investment so work can begin as soon as funding is available.
So just a quick highlight of some of the key corridors in Multnomah County, and then I'll walk through really briefly, because I think we've got more presenters, some of the highlights of these corridor investments. So Southwest Corridor, I think you're quite familiar with, the extension of the MAX light rail line from downtown south of Portland down to Tigard and Tualatin. 11 miles of new light rail line there and 11 miles back. But this also, this investment includes miles of sidewalks and safe mark crossings, improved bikeways, new streetlights, and miles of new bus lanes along the way. 82nd Avenue, another sort of signature investment in the measure. This is, we're hoping we can push enhanced transit as far as possible, potentially to the point of being able to draw down federal funds through the FTA. This is an example of what, one of the routes that the council president spoke of, an older state highway that has been replaced by Highway 205, but now serves really as multiple main streets through vibrant areas of that part of Portland, and really investing in the ability of people to move around in this corridor using transit. This is one of the, I think it is the highest transit use, and your staff can help me with that, the highest transit use of any corridor in the package, and maybe even in the region. Central City, we're making investments in your Central City in Motion plan. Not every single project, but miles of new sidewalks, safe mark crossings, new bus lanes, and improved bikeways. Importantly, a study of the possibility of moving light rail through downtown underground. 122nd Avenue, major safety improvements, enhanced transit, and many other improvements to signals, streetlights, safe crossings. 162nd, similar to 122nd, a focus on safety, enhanced transit, miles of new sidewalks, safe crossings, new transit signal priorities, as well as 20 to 25 miles of new bus lanes. And I think this is actually the edge of Portland, so this is a shared project between Gresham and City of Portland. Powell Boulevard, building off of many past safety improvements that have already been made through local funds and state funds, but making additional safety improvements and planning for potential light rail out Powell. Albina Vision is a series of surface improvements that are not part of the broader highway project there, but are aimed at improving mobility and flow and can connect into the Albina Vision project. So all told, we are looking at $4 billion, a little bit more than $4 billion of investments in these 16 corridors in the more than 150 projects the council president mentioned. Our conservative estimate is that due to construction and related jobs, we'll see 37,500 minimum jobs created through these investments, maybe as high as above 50,000 jobs for the projects, and when you add in program investments that we'll get to in just 1 minute. And the estimate we've gotten is that the average wage would be $98,000 for construction jobs, so a very good wage. So in addition to the 16 corridors, we are looking at making investments in a series of programs that would provide annual funding and go out in a couple different ways, through agreements with agencies, but also through competitive grant processes. So we know we're making a lot of safety investments in these 16 corridors, but there are other parts of the region that need investments, in particular these days with folks using apps like Waze to get around, and as the region grows and where people live and work changes, new places pop up that have safety challenges. So we know we want to make ongoing investments in these safety hotspots. We want to make continuing investments in safe routes to schools. We've made inroads there, but we know there's a lot more investment required to help children get safely to school and have the option of walking and biking. And then we want to make a serious down payment on our region's plan for active transportation, for walking and biking connections. We know that it would take us something like 200 years at the pace we're investing to build out our current plan for our active transportation system. This will really advance our ability to move that overall plan forward. Whoops. The next set of programs really focus in on trying to reduce the and mitigate the impact, the positive side of the impact of making transportation investments with the negative side, which is the fact that sometimes major transportation investments displace people from the very area that investment is made. So we are looking at adding anti-displacement funding, which is to build off of the experience we had with Southwest Corridor with our Southwest Equitable Development Program, where we work with community to identify strategies to mitigate mitigate the involuntary displacement of folks, and really invest in those areas. Added to that would be a housing opportunity fund and a Main Streets program, but all aimed at making places where people can stay, where they can afford to stay, where small businesses can afford to stay. Lastly, a series of programs largely connected to transit. So we are working with TriMet to allow them to not buy another diesel bus as of, I think the date is 2024, and replace the entire fleet with electric buses, reducing the diesel emissions that come from TriMet buses currently. I believe, unfortunately, TriMet buses are the largest single source of diesel emissions in the region. So this will have a huge impact on air quality in the region. We're also very pleased, as Commissioner Udaly noted, to be able to stand up a youth pass program. And we're working there to ensure out the gate that we can provide youth passes to all high school students in the region. And we're working to expand this to this as broad a group as possible, including all the way down to middle school and elementary school students, as we get more experience with how broad the usage of this youth pass is. We want to make additional investments in better bus, in the ability of buses to move through crowded intersections outside of just the 16 key corridors that we're investing in. We also want to continue to invest in future corridor planning. So we're setting aside a small amount of resource to do ongoing planning. There is also a lot of resource included directly in the measure, as in some of the places I had noted earlier, for continued corridor planning. So all of this work came out of the fantastic work that our task force did. This is a picture of, you can see Commissioner Udaly there on the right and other members of our task force. It was actually 22 meetings over the course of about 14 months, often twice a month. But we were able to gain unanimous support for 90% of the investments that are in these 16 corridors. We were very, very excited to see that level of collaboration. The task force was made up of about a third elected officials, about a third community voices, and about a third business leaders. And it was very intentional to bring those folks together to attempt to build the kind of consensus that we ended up being very successful in achieving. This is actually an image of the local investment team process that we put together over the summer. We had about 28 different meetings of three different local investment teams, one in each of the three counties, 16 bus tours around the region, looking at these corridors, getting feedback about the what priority we should focus on for investments. And that was an incredibly useful bit of community feedback that fed back in the task force and into the prioritization of the corridors. So let's invest in our future. Let's get shovels in the ground. Let's get people back to work. Let's get moving. And that concludes our presentation.
Very good. Commissioner Udaly, did you have anything else to wrap up before we go to public testimony?
No, I'm good. Thank you, President Peterson and Andy. That was a really lovely wrap up of the last, I don't know, year or so. We really did get a lot done.
Yeah, a year and
we
a
really
half.
Did.
A lot done.
That was an excellent presentation. We appreciate you all being here. Keelan, do we have any public testimony on this item?
Mayor, I think we have a couple more invited.
Oh, I apologize. I thought that was wrapping up the presentation. Go ahead, and Chris, take it from here.
Great. Thank you. And do you have slide deck?
And Chris, will you just signal me when all of the presentations are complete, I can call for public testimony.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay. For the record, Chris Warner, Director of the Portland Bureau of Transportation. Thank you, President Peterson and Andy. That was a great summary of the Getting Moving proposal. And thank you, Commissioner, and your staff for representing the city so well during those infamous 20-plus meetings. And to the mayor and the rest of council, thank you for your support. Your values have really, really helped shape this project, and we really appreciate all of your help. And it's a pleasure to talk a little bit about where we're going today with this. The proposed investment included in this measure really represents the region's boldest efforts to meet our safety, equity, and climate outcomes. If passed by voters, it will allow us to make the improvements. Without this funding, we probably wouldn't be able to make for decades. So it's so important. It also represents the best work of the region in terms of listening to our BIPOC communities and following through with the commitments to address the inequities in our system. So I'm going to do two quick things. I'm going to first clarify what the resolution is that you'll be voting on, and then I will highlight some of the next steps. And then I want to do a quick thanking of our agency partners before I turn it over to Commissioner Vega Peterson, who is the co-chair of the committee. So if we could get the next slide, please. So the resolution before you today documents City Council's support for the Get Moving Regional Investment Measure and Portland's commitment to lead and to partner with other agencies in the development of the specific projects following the passage of the measure. Metro is asking for similar letters of support from all of the other agencies and jurisdictions that will be delivering projects. If the measure passes, PBOT will return to City Council with legally binding intergovernmental agreements consistent with the intent of the measure next year. One of the things that we've talked about is how we manage the risk. Although we have decades of experience delivering on transportation grants allocated through Metro, this funding stream does represent an unprecedented amount of funding for the region. Over the last year, the agency staff have worked together to develop cost estimates and project implementation strategies that will allow us to manage our risk in project delivery. The process for managing project scope within budget will be further refined in the intergovernmental agreement, which we will negotiate after the passage of the measure. Next slide, please. So Metro Council, as President Peterson alluded to, is currently planning to refer the measure to voters in the middle of July. If it passes in November, then we will be back in 2021 to talk about those intergovernmental agreements, which will commit the city to work with partners to deliver the projects. I'd like to take a quick moment really to thank a few of the agency and community partners that have gotten us there today. Obviously, the great work of Metro with Andy and President Peterson and all the great team there really did create and empower a very large, diverse community task force that brought us all together. Andy mentioned the local investment teams and how that really helped add such value to the process. I want to thank ODOT for their openness to entering into an intergovernmental agreement, or a jurisdictional transfer, I should say, as we're moving forward to bring facilities like Barber and 82nd Avenue into city ownership. We're really grateful for that partnership. I also want to thank TriMet, particularly for their continued support for all levels of enhanced transit. We really appreciate the agency leaning into these efforts to address displacement, which, as we've noted, can really follow some of the major transit investments. So the Southwest Corridor really is the first time we've kind of looked at a transit project and included funds for both Prosper Portland and Portland Housing Bureau at the front end to really help address displacement. I also want to shout out to TriMet for their support of the 82nd Avenue Transit Project and the programs like Better Bus and Youth Pass. Those are just critical for everyone in our community. And I also want to thank Multnomah County for their continued work on the Burnside Bridge, which is a critical lifeline. And really, they've been such an instrumental partner with us in terms of our shared equity work in East Portland. So thank you, Multnomah County. And then I hopefully Lisa Abouaf is on here from Prosper Portland, and I think she'll go after me. But I really want to thank the leadership of the other bureaus who have really brought the issue of displacement and really brought it to the fore and have really helped us address it in this measure. Since we have started these conversations a couple of years ago, the region has implemented both the renter and tenant protection. We passed the city and regional housing measures. We've also passed the regional homeless services measure. So this measure itself would provide another over $200 million in continued investment in community stability. And that's something that I never would have dreamed about in a transportation project. So really linking of transportation, housing, and economic development has been very gratifying. And I also really want to thank the incredible staff at PBOT. I want to recognize Art Pierce, who's been involved in almost every major transit project in this region for many years. This isn't been Art's first rodeo, but I think he would agree that the Broncos in this one have been especially challenging and spirited. There's so many people to thank, Kristen Hull, Mark Lear, Carla Kingsley, Teresa Boyle, Patrick Sweeney, Jamie Jeffries, the list goes on and on. So thank you, PBOT staff. I also want to recognize Dan Eisenbeis from Government Relations. It really has been a collaborative effort with all the city bureaus, and it's been really great to get to this point. And I also really want to thank our community partners. Over 2 years ago, the Getting There Together Coalition formed and really ensured that the proposed regional ballot measure was focused on climate safety and equity, but they brought a real powerful voice to the process, and just the unprecedented level of support is very encouraging. I also like to thank the business organizations, Business for a Better Portland and PBA, for their openness and their important additions to this work. And I think the last thing I'd like to say is it's important. President Peterson talked about jobs. Our recent success with our meeting our goals with our MWESB on fixing our streets really for us serves as a sign of what we really need to do and what we want to do with additional resources. We're committed to working with Metro to make sure that we hit those MWESB goals, and this funding will really just add to the work that we've already been doing. So with that, I would like to turn it over to Lisa Abouaf, if she is here, to say a few words. There she is.
Awesome. Hey, Chris.
Thanks, Lisa.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Thank you, Chris. I'm just going to take a brief minute to both thank and acknowledge the work that PBOT and Metro and quite a number of partner bureaus have been doing as we think about this measure. We are in the process, I would say, of talking through a partnership structure and approach with Metro that would be both kind of a regional effort and a reflection of the increased partnership that we've been having between PBOT, the Housing Bureau, the Planning Bureau, and others within the city. And really, it is, I think, comes from a place of wanting to demonstrate that our work is changing and that the outcomes that we are prioritizing as we invest in transit measures also take into consideration stabilization of communities as we go forward. And in particular, we've been thinking through how do some of the programs that Prosper offers through things like small business technical assistance or technical assistance to BIPOC-owned businesses or affordable commercial can partner up with the resources that could be made available through this measure. So I just wanted to take a brief minute to both acknowledge that partnership that is in formation and that it will be key and critical going forward to continue to think about how we stabilize communities in their totality, from housing to workforce to small business development, as well as kind of safety and accessibility through transit measures.
Thank you, Lisa. If that is all, I would not.
Actually,
yes, I'd now like to introduce Commissioner Jessica Vega Peterson, our Get Moving Task Force co-chair.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I just had a little trouble coming off mute. So good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. For the record, I'm Jessica Vega Peterson, Multnomah County Commissioner for much of Southeast and East Portland, and I was the co-chair of the Transportation Funding Task Force, and I use she, her pronouns. Thanks so much for having me here today. It's a real pleasure to be able to talk about all the work that we did, over the past couple of years on this measure. And I want to start off by thanking some folks, although really Chris Warner did an amazing job thanking literally everybody in the world. So I'm going to start off by thanking him and all the PBART staff who participated in this process, as well as Commissioner Udaly and your staff for all the work that you've done. Your partnership and advocacy were a critical part of shaping this measure. Also have to give a shout out to President Peterson and all the Metro staff for the wonderful work that they did in getting us to this point as well. This was truly a collaborative process. And what I wanted to do today is really talk about two main things. One is to provide some additional background on the level of engagement that went into the task force recommendations, talk about the values, the shared values that really came out of that engagement, and then talk a little bit about what this means, this measure means for the community where I live, which is East Portland. So as you heard, the task force itself included elected officials and a diverse collection of community, civic, and business leaders from all across the region. It was 35 members in total. And as has also been mentioned, the group met over 20 times and made sure to meet in different parts of the region as well. One of the things that I think was so special about the process that we went through is that at the very beginning of our work, we agreed as a group on the core values that would focus the work that we had ahead of us. And those values were safety, investing in BIPOC and low-income communities, reducing climate change and air pollution, supporting economic growth, and providing transportation options for our communities. For such a diverse group of people to come together around these values, and then the projects and programmatic investments speaks to the enormous need in our community for transportation investments. There is a recognition of what we needed to do with this measure. We all recognize the need for safe, walkable communities. We all recognize the need to improve bus service, combat climate change, and connect communities to employment opportunities. And we all recognize that we are a regional system and a regional economy, and that the investments that happen at Tualatin Valley Highway in the west, 181st in the east, and the Burnside Bridge in the epicenter of our community, epicenter being used purposely, all benefit us collectively. We also all recognize that communities, particularly Black and Brown communities and low-income areas, have not seen the same level of transportation investment in this area, and that it is absolutely the right thing to do to invest in those communities with this measure. And that's what I'm most proud of in this proposed package of investments. This package has the opportunity to truly move our region forward, making investments in underserved communities, enhancing our transit system, fostering a new generation of transit riders, investing in safety and our Vision Zero goals, and accounting for the unrelenting population growth that our region has faced and will continue to face. As a proud resident of East Portland, I am so heartened to see major investments in two of my main streets, 82nd Avenue and 122nd Avenue. These streets long ago fell into disrepair and became major dividing lines. They were repelling and dangerous to anyone who wasn't in a car, rather than main streets that foster community and walkable urbanism. This investment can change that, and that will change neighborhoods, livelihoods, and experiences for generations of Portlanders to come. When you add these investments to the improvement PBOT is making on other major roads and throughout East Portland transportation system, they're meaningful, impactful, and wonderful to see. And I don't want to give the impression that's all we need, because it's not enough, but it's making a big difference in the transportation needs of my community. And I know that the same thing is true in other underserved areas of our region, such as along TV Highway, 162nd, 181st, Outer Powell Boulevard, and elsewhere. So thanks so much for the chance today to talk about the work that we did as a task force, this package of investments. And thanks again for all the work you do, especially in these challenging times. While we might yearn for normalcy, I think this great leadership can thrive in a crisis and thrive in opportunity like we have here today. Thank you.
I want to thank you. Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Vega Peterson. We really appreciate your being here today. Thank you so much. And thanks for your leadership. Thanks.
And that concludes the invited testimony.
Very good. Are we ready then for public testimony? Keelan, how many people do we have signed up?
We have 7 people signed up.
Very good. 3 minutes each. Name for the record, please. And I'll just rely on you, Keelan, to call them out one at a time.
Okay. The first person is Kari Schloss-Hauer.
Welcome.
Hi, this is Kari Schlosshauer. Can y'all hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. You're good to go.
Great. Thank you so much. My name is Kari Schlosshauer. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler and members of the council and both councils. I am the senior policy manager for the Safe Routes Partnership, and I'm also a founding member of the Getting There Together Coalition. I use she or they pronouns, and I thank you for your time today. I'm here to speak in support of the Getting Moving resolution. And I expect that, especially after all these warm introductions, it will be easy for you all to support it because it really is a great package that will fund many new projects in Portland and across the region. I just wanted to share a few things that I'm especially excited about, which is to see a significant portion of package dollars that are allocated to safety and to transit and to access projects, especially long overdue needs on 82nd Avenue, as have been discussed, and other corridors in East Portland as well. I'm also really excited to see funding and attention against displacement from transportation. Beyond thrilled to see ongoing funding for Safe Routes to School, active transportation and safety funding that will be ongoing, and especially expansion of Portland Public Schools' successful Youth Pass program to high school aged youth region wide, hashtag regional youth pass. Super, super excited for all of these things. I want to give big kudos to Commissioner Udaly for her voice at the task force and also to your staff at PBOT for putting forward great projects that will help people of all ages and abilities and income levels to get around Portland more easily and also around the region. As others have alluded to, this measure could have been very different if it weren't for the involvement of community every step along the way. And in fact, the Getting There Together Coalition formed when and because a bond concept emerged that included only the Southwest Corridor light rail line and three highway projects back in 2017. Our coalition pushed to change that conversation around what the transportation needs in the community are, and at the time highlighted the voices that weren't at the table and never really have been. We really appreciate that Metro took a new approach and involved the community through new tables and new approaches to determining what the values and priorities investments should be in this process. Our coalition is broad and diverse. We include more than 60 community-based organizations, and Getting There Together has brought forward the needs and perspectives from BIPOC-led organizations, youth, older adults, people with disabilities, working class and transit-dependent folks. Being part of this process and advocating for outcomes for our communities has definitely resulted in better projects and better programs, better funding priorities that will benefit those in our community who have really, as you know by now, too long been neglected by transportation investments. We are here and we've been here to make sure that we continue to seek out and listen to and prioritize the needs of these communities, because I think as has been shown in the last several weeks, and at this point, we all know that this is the beginning of a long journey that we're all taking, and we have more steps to take after this measure. So we support this measure being referred to the voters, and we feel that it's the opportunity that we have right now to do a lot to improve our transportation system so that it works better for our communities. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Kim Marks.
Welcome, Kim.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Great. My name is Kim Marks. I'm the Director of Transportation Equity at the Rosewood Initiative and a member of the Getting There Together Coalition. I am here today to show our support for the Get Moving Initiative and request that you all have a favorable vote today. At the beginning of this process, it was not a sure bet that East Portland was going to get a very well received get very many resources. I want to thank Commissioner Udaly for the hard work that she did during the task force meetings and the PBOT staff, the work that they did behind the scenes, as well as the receptiveness of Metro staff in our work together in putting together the corridor package. This package will have significant positive impacts on East Portland. My focus today is on 122nd and 162nd. As you have heard me say on numerous occasions, these are the only two north-south bus corridors in East Portland, east of 205. This measure will bring significant safety improvements to both corridors. But just as importantly, it will bring anti-displacement resources and housing resources to these corridors. As you saw in the auditor's report, East Portland is currently under great gentrification pressures. We need more resources to ensure that low-income and BIPOC communities are able to stay where they currently live. This measure is a down payment in that respect. It will also bring other resources, including safe routes to schools, that are greatly needed in East Portland. Again, I want to thank Commissioner Hugh Daly for going to the mat for East Portland during the process. It was not a sure thing that the task force would include 122nd and 162nd. So we have seen the work and we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Kim.
Next up, we have Risha Pujol.
Hi, Risha.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. Hi, Mayor Wheeler, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to join today. My name is Risha Podell. I'm the Advocacy Director of the Street Trust. I'm also here in support of the Let's Get Moving resolution. And just to speak to some of the work that our organization as a part of Getting There Together Coalition has been doing on this regional measure. Since I started this job about 2 years ago, and this measure has taken up a significant portion of my role. As a coalition, we've really tracked and worked to ensure that every part of what's funded through this measure was reflecting of community needs as it could be. You know, I know you all know this, but I think working on a complex, basically piece of legislation over a couple of years can be challenging. It can be challenging to sort of count your wins. As there are a number of pieces in the measure and each of them are really deserving of being vetted by community. So as we as a coalition have put in quite a bit of collective labor over the last 2 years, and as Kari mentioned early, actually longer as we reformed in response to a potential ballot measure with TriMet in 2017. But I just wanted to kind of highlight a few of the wins as I see them in my time working on this measure in coalition. So as y'all mentioned, a regional youth pass with a real path towards free fares for all students 18 and under. As many as you are aware, this is a campaign that has been active since the late 90s, started as most movements are by Black women, and furthered since with leadership from Opal Environmental Justice and Multnomah Youth Commission. And while it shouldn't have taken as long as it did, we're really proud to have supported in that work and appreciate the partnership with Metro staff and TriMet and Commissioner Hugh Daly. I know this is a really big lift, and we're really excited to see that this is going to make transit a real option for youth across our region. Another win, safe routes to school funding. That's something the Street Trust has championed at the state level as well. And we work in our programming with a lot of kids and youth to get them comfortable walking and biking in their neighborhoods. So that was a really important part of the measure to us. And then just, you know, y'all have already talked about it, but just really serious investments in transit and safety on the roadways in our neighborhoods that have just been so long neglected and are kind of finally coming around to being addressed in this measure. Many of them have been mentioned, but I'll just name, you know, some of the most dangerous roads for pedestrians in our region: 82nd Avenue, TB Highway in Washington County, and Southeast McLaughlin in Clackamas County. We worked really hard to advocate for levels of funding on each of these that would really transform them away from the car-centric roads that they currently are and bring them closer to being streets that are really made for people with their kind of physical safety in mind. And so I just want to express like gratitude to Metro staff and Metro counselors, Commissioner Hugh Daly, for all of your labor in this process. It feels like shared labor, and I'm just feeling grateful for that, and also proud for some of our regional wins and the power that our coalition has built since starting this work. So thank you.
Thanks, Richa. Appreciate it.
Next up, we have Alejandra Gallegos Chacon.
Excellent. Alejandra, welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, okay, great. Sorry. Thank you, y'all. Hi, everyone. My name's Alejandra Gallegos Chacon. I'm the Yeisha community organizer over at OPAL. Some of the things y'all said in your presentation actually altered my testimony. So it's different now. But before I go in, I just wanted to start by thanking all the community engagement that was done around here, especially from like Unite Oregon and the Getting There Together Coalition. And a very special shout out again just to the GTT folks, because they made sure that youth were engaged at all levels and respected us as leaders. Thank you for that. And I'm also here to speak and why you should support the Get Moving resolution today. I will say I just have to flag, it makes me slightly uncomfortable when white people say that the reason they didn't want to invest in transportation earlier in the year or back in the day, whatever, because y'all were worried about people moving here. It makes me slightly nervous just given Oregon's history around exclusion. That's something to be very mindful of, y'all. It is slightly uncomfortable to see all the pictures in y'all's presentations depicting BIPOC folk, when I know that at the levels of Metro and City of Portland, almost all the staff is white and leadership is all white. So, you know, let's maybe be a little bit more critical about how we use pictures of people. It comes off a little tokenizing. Just uncomfortable as your constituent, y'all. So, you know, sit with it. In regards to this measure, Youth Pass obviously has been a longstanding issue, right? Like 20 years coming. I really want to highlight that Sisters in Action, which was a group of young Black women, really led the charge on this. And since then, a lot of other youth groups, predominantly youth of color, such as Yeisha ourselves, the Multnomah Youth Commission, Youth Lens Initiative, and Momentum Alliance have all backed the expansion of Youth Pass to East Portland, right, where there's like predominantly people of color and just low income folks in Portland. So that is something that we are super, y'all are like thanking each other, patting yourselves on the back from TriMet to Metro, but also thank you so much to these groups for doing the education and the outreach and showing up. These youth like work incredibly hard, honestly, harder than some of adults I know. So I am super appreciative of them for always showing up, even if it's after school or during school, to just try and tell y'all how much they need this to get where they're going. I will note that I think because it has been led by Black and Brown youth, that's probably why it's been waited so long and ignored. But thank goodness, right, that Sunrise finally signed on so y'all would really stand up for us. I'm so grateful for Sunrise being an allyship and getting that recognition, but you forgot to mention us. All of you have put out statements recently suggesting that you value racial equity in Black Lives Matter. And I want to note that that will look like supporting this resolution and making real investments in transportation that supports low-income and BIPOC communities in Portland. And finally, by not erasing the Youth Pass history in Portland. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Nia Calloway.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Nia. How are you today?
I'm all right. My name is Nia Calloway, to the City Council and those with the Get Moving Measure voting process. I'm a Black youth advocate with Youth Environmental Justice Alliance and a campaign lead for Regional Youth Pass. A lot of you have heard my voice before. In 2018, I urged you to keep Youth Pass in the city budget at a city budget forum meeting at City Hall. It took me a 40-minute commute as a sophomore at Parkhurst High School to get from school to City Hall, which was a bus, a long max ride, and a lot of walking downtown streets to literally plead to my city commissioners and mayor to make it easier for neglected East County kids like me to succeed and to just simply live in our city. I was actually told by you, Ted Wheeler, and this is something that has actually stuck with me a lot throughout this campaign process, that he and the city had essentially done their share while in the same breath stating that the city hadn't contributed to finding permanent funding for Youth Pass. So now, 2 years later, BIPOC youth have found and made the means to reliable and long-term funding for equitable regional Youth Pass that meets their needs. And I also want to just preface that a lot of this work, like it's been stated before by Alejandra, has been done by these BIPOC youth. So all you have to do now is just give your support by voting yes on this measure. And as I'm sure you all know, not only do Portland youth of color deal with transit injustices, but many of us low-income youth suffer from environmental injustices pertaining to air quality and health resources in their communities. According to the OMH, Black children in 2014 were almost 3 times more likely to die from asthma-related causes than the white population. And the National Equity Atlas found in 2015 that 19.7% of Black households did not have vehicles, which was the highest rate in the U.S. at that time. So Youth Pass would be able to aid Black Portland youth with free public transit by means of a more fuel-efficient way to get to human resources, as well as working to eradicate the targeting and profiling that occurs for young Black and brown people on transit by giving them a program that tells them that they should be safe getting where they need to go. Now is the time to show BIPOC youth that you're thinking about us, acknowledging that transit justice is a resource that we need and have always been asking and advocating for. Youth Pass helps reduce carbon pollution, ensures a future of loyal public transit riders, but more importantly, it empowers Portland youth to be active in their communities, to get the resources they need, and tells them that their city cares about their success, their fulfillment, and their lives. As just a last point, I want to just let you know and make sure that you're thinking about Black youth that are advocating. Throughout these past couple of weeks, I've seen so much Black activism, and a lot of it is coming from the youth. And even in BIPOC communities, people of color just in general are coming together to advocate for these things. And this is something that I think a lot of Black youth need right now. And just as city officials who have the power to do something, I think this is one of those things that can show your city and, you know, Black youth in your city that you're listening and that you care about them. Thank you.
Right on. Thanks, Nia. Appreciate it.
Next up, we have Gio.
Welcome.
Hi, can you hear me?
We sure can. Thanks, Gio.
So, this is not a part of my testimony, but I do feel like it is important. And if this runs over 3 minutes, I refuse to be cut off because you are here to listen to people. I will preface that now. But it is disheartening to see the city council, people who are meant to serve our communities, give credit and praise one another and other white organizations when it has been the back, when they have essentially Black and brown youth have been the backbone of these programs, especially Youth Pass. It is disheartening to hear no one acknowledge Yasia. It is disheartening to hear no one acknowledge Sisters in Action. It undermines and discredits the work that these Black and brown youth have done, that they have spent so much time and energy and labor on trying to get these rights for their communities. So for future reference, I would suggest that all of you guys focus on the history of Youth Pass and a lot of these movements that have been basically, it has been, anyways, that's what I wanted to say. But now I will start my testimony. My name is Gio Su. I'm a student from David Douglas High School and a campaign lead at Yasia. Today, I'm here to address how your support of the Metro Get Moving measure will impact our communities, specifically your support of the Youth Pass program. For 20 years now, the movement founded by Sisters in Action, a collective of young Black women to create a more equitable transit system for our youth, has gone unsupported by the City Council. In early 2018, City Council essentially declared that transit was not a priority and pulled back funding for Youth Pass. As your constituent, I'm here to say that transit is a priority, especially so if you care for the Black youth, youth of color, and transit-dependent youth within your communities. You cannot have racial justice without transportation justice. It is not enough to defund the Portland Police Bureau by $15 million, a majority of which was out of concern for COVID-19, rather than concern for the well-being of our Black community members. The path to supporting Black liberation entails more than just the defunding of law enforcement. It also includes the dismantling of all systems of oppression. To claim that Black Lives Matter, you must evaluate the social injustices present within our governmental systems of basic human necessities and the intentionally limited access Black community members have to these resources. Among these resources includes access to transportation, something that this measure could provide regionally and year-round to all youth under 18, regardless of income level. This measure provides a unique opportunity for you all to support these Black youth beyond performative activism and dishonest promises. Now is the time to right the wrongs you have all committed against Black youth in 2018 when you denied them access to transportation, access to their own city. As for other forms of atonement, recognize the cruciality of community involvement and direction in the implementation of these programs. While there has been a level of engagement this measure has undergone, thanks to the work of the Gang There Together Coalition and Unite Oregon, I encourage you all to maintain and exceed this level of community engagement in all realms, including planning, funding mechanisms, decision-making, and projects feedback. I implore you all, as City Council Commissioners, to support the Metro Get Moving measure and approve the resolution for the sake of our youth's livelihoods, especially the Black youth present within the communities you are all meant to serve. Thank you.
Thanks for your perspective, Gio. Appreciate it.
Next up, we have Edom Daniel.
Very good. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Edom. I went to school at David Douglas, and I'm here as a part of YEJA. Initially, thank you for your time. Today, I want to address the importance of the City Council supporting the Metro Get Moving measure, specifically in regards to Youth Pass. First things first, I really want to thank the Getting There Together Coalition for their work in giving us this, giving us space and giving us youth, specifically I'm a Black youth, in getting to this position. Personally, when I first started my campaign work for Youth Pass, it was actually right after the City of Portland pulled out their funding contribution for the program. I want y'all to sit and acknowledge that that was your mindful decision. This was a detrimental decision in achieving any of the desired equity in this city, as this program is critical to the success of marginalized communities. BIPOC youth have suffered from this loss and are the same ones picking up the slack and finding ways to support this program. We have searched and found, tried to find different avenues and how we can make this program possible and how we can support it in this 20-year-long battle, yet City of Portland kind of just claimed that it wasn't one of their priorities and decided that somebody else can pick it up for them. So I want to also think that there was growth in community engagement that has given Youth Pass the ability to be in this position for you all to see today. Hence, why we demand y'all listen to your constituents and go through with supporting Youth Pass and righting your wrongs. Take accountability for this decision that you made in 2018 and realize that you are turning around and making this possible now. I want to thank their efforts, but I also ask you all to utilize the efforts of youth who have allocated the attention for our whole region for this crucial program and figured out another avenue to fund it without the need of City of Portland funding. This is for our city. Youth have been fighting for this. Black and brown youth have stepped up. I have had to work hard on this for so long, while many of my other peers have had their homework finished by 9 p.m., I was commuting back home from one of the meetings downtown to make sure my voice was heard. Many of your youth are not going through this, but I want you to know that this is important for us to accomplish this. So I strongly say I implore you as a city council to support the Metro Get Moving measure and approve the resolution when all it asks for is your support and nothing else. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that is all who has signed up, Mayor.
All right, very good. Colleagues, any further discussion before we call the roll on this item? Commissioner Daly, I think you have your hand up, but I think that may be old. Is that correct? Okay, good. Seeing no further discussion and no further questions, I want to thank everybody for your testimony today. Keelan, please call the roll.
You, Daly.
Well, thank you everyone for being here today, the presenters and people who gave public testimony. I, having lived in rural, suburban, and urban areas of the metro region, have to admit that I was a little skeptical about all of us coming together and reaching consensus on this funding measure. Although we all live in the same region, we face unique needs and challenges. We have competing values and priorities sometimes. And especially those early meetings, I just thought, oh boy, we are, you know, in for a rough ride. But by that last meeting, when we sat around the table sharing kind of our final reflections, I really was almost moved to tears by how far the conversation had come and how, and the consensus that we had reached. It was a challenging process, but it was ultimately really gratifying. I have a long list of thank yous to add to Director Warner's thank yous. Again, I want to thank Metro President Lynn Peterson, of course, and our co-chairs, Washington County Commissioner Pam Treese, who wasn't here today, but was there all along co-chairing, and Multnomah County Commissioner Jessica Vega Peterson, as well as all the members of the Get Moving Task Force. I want to note that the meetings happened during rush hour, and whether we were coming from across the bridge at City Hall or from neighboring jurisdictions, I felt like it added some context and urgency to our conversation. And even though I was right across the river, I struggled to get there on time sometimes. I want to thank our community partners, TriMet, ODOT, Prosper Portland, Portland Housing Bureau, Business for a Better Portland, and Portland Business Alliance. I want to again thank the advocates who turned out, especially members of the Getting There Together Coalition and Sunrise Movement PDX. I'd also like to give a special shout out to OPAL Youth Environmental Justice Alliance and the Multnomah Youth Commission for their work on Youth Pass. Although I am more than twice the age of most of the youth who are involved with these organizations, they have been working on this issue longer than I have. I have been supportive of Youth Pass the entire time I've been in office, and it's been a struggle, and it's been, I guess, upsetting to me that we haven't been able to deliver this to youth sooner, who have been such amazing, relentless advocates. I hope that they get to celebrate this victory, because their advocacy was really instrumental to the inclusion of Youth Pass in this measure. It was a fight to keep it in, and it wouldn't be there without them. I know there are other groups that were involved in this this long-term movement for Youth Pass, but those are the two groups that I've worked directly with. And finally, I want to thank my amazing team at PBOT, especially Mark Lear, who attended every one of these meetings with me and provided some useful frame of reference for me being new to transportation and rarely satisfied with anything. I didn't feel like, you know, I was pushing hard enough, that I, you know, was getting everything that we needed. And he assured me that this measure was really kind of light years ahead of where we were in this conversation the last time around. So I really appreciate that, Mark. And finally, my policy director, Jamie Duhamel, who was also at most of these meetings and really instrumental. Thanks again, everyone. I'm excited for November, and I vote aye.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Udaly. Thank you, President Peterson, and Commissioner Vega-Peterson, and everybody who presented today. And thank you for each of the community members who spoke. This is, it's interesting to be yelled at for something that you've worked for 30 years. I was part of the Sisters in Action for Power from Jefferson High School when they were doing their great work to begin the work on Youth Pass. In fact, I drive a 20-year-old car and I still have their sticker in my window, and it says, "We'll work for justice." And significantly, the image is of three hands raised in fists, and the center one is a black fist, and it's higher than the other two. And that has been the movement behind the work that we've been doing. It was behind the work that we did during the recession under Sam Adams, Mayor Sam Adams, to keep Youth Pass going, even when we were cutting everything else. And it was behind working with Metro and TriMet to get the reduced fare youth and honored citizen passes that have applied outside of the school year and were still clearly inadequate. So it wasn't until the city made the decision in 2018 that what we were doing was not enough and not sustainable, that the conversations about universal free year-round transit for youth really took off, and thanks to the leadership of OPAL and the Multnomah Youth Commission. And Multnomah Youth Commission in particular will tell you that I have been a strong supporter of it since day one in 2009, and because I was before then too. I realize this sounds defensive. As I say, this has been my one of my passions, because there should be no barriers for people to choose transit, especially youth. And I enthusiastically support this measure, which does provide consistent and sustainable funding for Youth Pass program, with the year-round pass transit passes for all youth 18 and under. And still, that's not enough in my mind. I appreciate that it's a good step forward. And what we need to be working for is universal fare-free transit. Because once we all are able to ride our wonderful transit system again, that's the way that we're going to meet our climate disruption goals. And that's how we're going to connect families and individuals to employment, shopping, education, and recreational destinations safely, conveniently, and equitably. So it's my favorite part of this measure. And I also appreciate that some of the big infrastructure improvements are in East Portland, and I thank the folks in the East Portland Action Plan and others in East Portland for all of their advocacy on that, as well as Commissioner Vega-Peterson when she was in the legislature. So this is transformational. This measure, I believe, is significant in that it did bring the Get Moving Coalition together. It did bring the youth as honored voices. It brought in Washington County and Clackamas County. And I appreciate the Washington County jurisdictions who are also enthusiastically supporting this. In fact, this wouldn't have happened even 10 years ago. This would not have received the regional support and the awareness, and it didn't have the awareness of what equity even is, and why transit is an equity issue, why safety on our streets is an equity issue, who is it who is disproportionately being harmed by the sad state of our streets. And we have made that progress. So that's not to say, young people, don't take your foot off the gas. We certainly need to do more. And I appreciate your advocacy. I appreciate that you're going to take over from an old person like me who's going to be retiring at the end of the year. And I'm glad to know that there are others coming along who will have just the same passion as those Sisters in Action for Power young women that I learned so much of when I was just starting my advocacy career. So I'm very happy to support this measure, and thanks to all of you. Aye.
Wheeler.
Very happy to support this. I want to thank our regional partners, and I want to thank everybody who testified today. I agree. It is important for us to understand and discuss and own our history. It's also important for us to join together when we have opportunities to do so, to move forward in a productive way. And this ballot measure, I think, represents the best of what this region has to have. I will also say this, though. This is not a slam dunk. This is going to the ballot. And it will require all of us to push it very hard. There will be opposition to this ballot measure, and it will be well organized. And so I would encourage us at this point, whatever differences there may have been in the past, if we agree on both the values and the specifics of this ballot measure, and I'm hearing that from all of the testimony that we heard today, this is the time for us to join hands and really push hard to make this a reality. This is the best chance we've had, as many of you have indicated, in 20 or 30 years to get the youth pass done. We can do it. And this ballot measure gives us that opportunity in November, provided that we execute a really solid campaign. And that campaign has to continue to build on the coalitions that were created through this effort to bring us all together around this package. Commissioner Daly, I do want to thank you. I know how many meetings you've gone to. I thank you for that, Commissioner Fritz. I also want to thank you for your decades of leadership on these issues. And President Peterson, our colleagues at the county, Chris, the work you guys do in the Bureau, and our excellent city employees. And yes, to our young people who have really pushed hard and elevated this as an important issue for them and for their generation. This is all good. I support it. I vote aye. The resolution is adopted. Now let's get to work and make sure the resolution becomes a reality. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, Keelan, unless there's any other business.
No, we are finished.
We are adjourned. Thank you, everybody. Have a good afternoon.